Chapter 61 Kip came back from training to find his room trashed. His mirror was broken, the legs of his chair were broken, his pillow was slashed open, his mattress was slashed open. The coin purse with his wages he kept hidden on a roof beam had been stolen. His desk's surface had been scored with a knife, his inkwell upended all over it. His chamber pot had been filled by whoever had done this and had been emptied in the middle of his bed. A note, carefully tented on heavy wood pulp paper, sat on the desk, slowly wicking up ink.
"I'm done playing games. Come see me immediately. T.G.
T.G. The Guile. Because that's how Andros sees himself. Not as Andros, not as the Red, not even as the Promarchos, but as the representative of all that is this family. That was the most important thing to Andros Guile. The urine was incredibly pungent. Ugh, someone's not drinking enough water. And to think of that first, someone's been training with the Blackguard too much. But aside from that wry thought, Kip was oddly unmoved. So his stuff had been smashed. So what? He'd had less in the past. So his money had been stolen. So what? He didn't need money. He had friends now, and work to do, things to accomplish. That was infinitely more precious, wasn't it? He stared at the mess and knew that he wouldn't even have to clean it up himself. There were slaves whose services he could borrow from the Cromeria. If this was meant to be a kick in the nuts, old man, you've missed. This is barely a kick in the thigh. In fact, more than anything else this does, it tells me about you. If you did it to irritate me, it's because you imagined it would work. You imagined it would work because it would work on you. So this is the worst you can imagine happening to you? Can't bear to be disrespected, can you? Interesting. I'll remember that. Kip's first urge was to go somewhere else, anywhere else, but passive defiance was the old Kip. Passive defiance was indistinguishable from cowardice. He told himself it wasn't that he cared if Andros thought he was a coward, it was what he thought of himself. He was afraid of the old man. He could accept that fear, it was perfectly rational, but to let himself be controlled by his fear. Funny how I'm echoing things I've heard in Blackguard training, as if they're my own thoughts. Enough thinking. Kip stepped into the hallway. He spied a slave approaching.
"Callan," he called, "who's your master?"
"I serve at the pleasure of Gariban Navid," the man said, obviously not appreciating being singled out.
"He's a discipulus?"
"Yes, sir."
"There's been a crime here. Report it to the Black's desk downstairs. You're allowed to cut to the front of the line, and ask that they send slaves to clean up the mess once the Black's men are finished investigating."
Slaves not serving colours could be compelled by any free man or woman in an emergency, or to report a crime. Of course, it was a privilege that the wise exercised with caution. No one liked a stranger commandeering his property.
"Yes, sir," the man said.
"Hold," Kip said.
He dug into his purse. One didn't tip slaves, and Kip only had 3 dinars left, but hell with that. He gave the slave 2 of them.
"Thank you,"
he said. The slave sneered, like Kip didn't know what he was doing, like Kip was an uncouth mixed breed. He began walking toward the lifts, and realized that the slave's presence was terribly convenient. He turned.
"Oh, and if it was you, drink more water," Kip said.
"Sir?"
"Kidney stones. I hear it's like having the tip of your penis pounded with a hammer."
The slave's face iced over. He looked like he wanted to spit in Kip's face.
"I've been cut, sir."
"Oh, so there's a bright side to gelding. Never would have thought. Carry on, then."
Kip knew that he should be taking advantage of his walk to form a plan, an approach to the most masterful manipulator in the Cromeria, but his thoughts kept going in circles. He nodded to the Blackguards, waving the letter in their direction, and opened the door to Andros Guile's rooms without knocking. It wasn't locked. That was sort of funny. Andros was so certain that his reputation would scare the hell out of people that he didn't even have his slave lock his door, or command the Blackguards to maintain his privacy. Unless, of course, Grinwoody had simply forgotten to do it. The man was getting older. A small, mean part of Kip delighted in the hope that Grinwoody was growing senile. He would weep when Andros cast off the old wrinkled sack of excrement. Tears
of joy.
Kip moved through the antechamber and saw Grinwoody dozing on his feet, just leaning against the wall next to the door to the inner room. But Grinwoody woke before Kip took three steps. He was bleary, though, trying to hide that he'd been asleep. Kip handed the old slave the ink-stained note as if it were an invitation and strode right past him. Andros wasn't in the main room. Startled, Grinwoody hustled to get back in front of Kip.
You can wait in the... High Lord Guile is...
You can kiss the bald spot where my fat thighs rub together, Kip said. He threw open the bedroom door. His grandfather was in bed, and he wasn't alone. Worse, Kip had seen the woman lying next to him before. It was Tisis Milagos, heart-shaped face and pale skin. Lots of pale skin, just like when she tried to kill Kip during the threshing. Tisis Milagos, who had been a colour for the space of only moments before Gavin had unseated her. Kip was rooted in place. Tisis's hair was piled in delicate blonde curls held in a web of emeralds, and her hand was under the sheets moving up and... Oh, dear Orholm. She didn't see Kip immediately, or at least he hoped that was why her hand hadn't stopped moving, but Andros Guile did. He looked up at Kip, and Kip could see the sudden war on Andros Guile's natures, the calculating spider already figuring how to turn this surprise back to his own benefit, versus the red who drafted passion and fire and all things hot and burning for decades. The worst of it might have been that it was far more shocking to see his grandfather naked than Tisis. Tisis saw that she'd lost Andros's attention, and she followed his gaze. A fraction of an instant of shame passed through her eyes, and then it turned to pure hatred.
The funny thing is, Kip found himself saying, I think I've seen you naked more times than I've seen you clothed.
Huh. I guess if you only have one thing going for you, you got to play it to the hilt, huh?
Too bad such a beautiful package has to house such ugliness.
Tisis was out of the bed in an instant. She was still wearing a slip, though the straps had been pushed down off her shoulders, so apparently Kip had only interrupted their foreplay. Tisis picked up a vase and hurled it at Kip. Her arm tangled in her slip's straps, and she missed by a league, splashed water over herself, and dropped roses on the floor, and smashed what was probably a priceless vase.
Get out, you fat worm! You detestable little bastard, you...
Her pale complexion flared with rage and frustration as she tried to throw items and words and hike up her straps over her shoulders all at the same time. Interrupting, Kip said,
I like you fat carbuncle on the arse of a great family.
I mean, if we're going for fat jokes. Comparisons with beached whales are routine, but acceptable. Bonus points for slipping oleaginous in.
You know what's sad? What's sad is that you probably think what you're doing is smart. You think you can play Andros Guile and get more out of him than he gets out of you. Pathetic.
Kip's tongue was fully in charge now, and he didn't care. The tongue is a flame, and Kip was throwing fire at every flammable surface he could see. Let it burn.
You know what else is pathetic? My grandfather is so vain that he's probably convinced himself that you're falling for his charms, even though he's smart enough to know you're just prostituting yourself. Tell me, Tisis, how do you hide your disgust when you see his body? When you moan, do you worry that he can tell you're putting him on? Or do you despise him because you know he can't tell?
She screamed and threw a pillow at him. A pillow. Grinwoody, Kip said, not turning, but somehow aware of the presence behind him. You oleaginous worm, if you so much as touch me, I'll kill you. Think twice before you lay hands on a guile, even an adipose one.
Kip took in red and yellow, there were colours everywhere in this room, and let them swirl under the skin of his face and neck, going visibly down to his hands. It was the magical equivalent of cocking a pistol. The slave didn't touch him.
Andros Guile got up, impassive. The spider in him had won out. Somehow Kip knew it would be a mistake to think he was less dangerous simply because he wasn't shouting. He was unashamed of his nudity. Which makes one of us.
Enough!
Andros said.
Enough!
Tisis shouted.
Enough!
He slapped her, without passion. It caught Tisis unaware. His big, meaty hand caught her across the neck and cheek. Her head snapped to the side and she dropped to the thick carpet, not even trying to arrest her fall. She was unconscious. For a moment, Kip was afraid she was dead. Apparently, it was a concern Andros shared.
He knelt over her, poking fingers into her neck. Satisfied by what he found, he stood.
That worked rather better than I expected, Andros said. Grinwoody, put down the knife, my robe, then attend to Lady Milagos. She's easily embarrassed, so cover her before you use the smelling salts.
As Grinwoody draped the robe across Andros's bare shoulders, the Promarchos turned to Kip.
So, you got my note. I wasn't expecting you yet. Thought you'd sulk for a while. Come, let's sit in my parlour.
Kip followed him into the main room of the apartments where they'd played Nine Kings so many times. Like this was normal. You're not even going to try to deny it? Kip asked. You trashed my room and pissed on my bed. Destroyed everything, stole my money.
Well, not personally. Brandy?
No, I don't want your damn brandy.
That's too bad.
Andros poured two glasses anyway and put one in front of Kip. He sat in his chair and gestured for Kip to sit across from him.
Knowledge of fine alcohols is mostly an affectation, but an important one. Men respect those who have greater knowledge of the trivial than they do when that trivia is costly. Nothing more so than spirits.
Here's the thing, Kip said. He was saying here's the thing a lot recently. It irritated him. Why didn't he just launch into what he had to say? Here's the thing. Damn it. Twice. It isn't that you would tear up my room that I find surprising. You've tried to have me killed before, so I don't really think anything is beneath you. It isn't even that you would claim the action after you did it. I know you like watching people jump. I think you were trapped in this room so long becoming a white that you needed people to come to you so you didn't only hear second or third-hand accounts. You learned to become obvious so you'd get the thrill of having some power in this world. I understand all that, Kip said. You're a pathetic shut-in who is suddenly not shut-in anymore, and you aren't adjusting to it well. Andros's eyes, so amused, mere seconds later, turned into wells of darkness. He sipped his brandy as if watching Kip dig his own grave. Here's what I don't understand, Kip said. How could you be so stupid? An arched eyebrow. I am of you, Kip said. I am guile as much as you are, true. I have a scrap of decency, but only a scrap. How do you think you can treat a girl with such disregard and get away with it? Because I am you. I'm as cold as you, I'm as smart as you, and when you push me, I'm as evil and cruel as you. I've a thin film of goodness floating on the top of my guile, grandfather, but I don't know how senile you must be to miss just how thin it is.
Words, like the stench of a fart,
Andros said. He waved a hand as if to dispel them.
You're marshalling them better than you did. But don't bring your games to me. We're past that now. There is nothing about you that inspires fear, Kip. Your very name is insubstantial, Kip.
He smirked condescension.
Words without actions are weightless. Throw them against the wall and see. Nothing.
Kip wondered how fast he could draft. He wondered if it was faster than Grinwoody and Andros together. He wanted to kill them both. He wanted to stand up and piss on Andros Guile himself to show what he thought of him. But he didn't think he could get away with it, and having emptied both barrels of his rhetoric in Andros Guile's face and having hit nothing, he felt suddenly vulnerable. Empty. There was no more powder at hand. He was the barely acknowledged bastard, alone, insulting the Guile, throwing epithets and disrespect at the Promarchos himself. And all he had at hand was the fact that he didn't care if he wrecked himself. Paltry ammunition indeed. He did his best to keep his sudden fear off his face, but if there was one emotion Andros Guile was attuned to, it was others' fear. He fed on it.
Want that brandy now?
Andros asked archly, the very personification of a lupine grin. I'll take it, Kip said, keeping his voice level.
No, you won't,
Andros said. The glass was sitting within easy reach. Kip thought of snatching for it, and then thought how fast fortune's wheel turns. One moment I threaten death in high dudgeon, the next I grub for a glass of brandy. And this was part of Andros Guile's curious power. Another lord might have thought denying his guest a drink was simple rudeness and been above it.
Andros Gyle didn't mind if he lowered himself, as long as he lowered his opponent more. Indeed, shame was a tool to be used against others, because Andros himself was shameless. Perhaps literally so. He had gotten out of bed naked without even acknowledging the fact. He seemed unperturbed about being naked, despite having all the spots and wrinkles and sagging skin of a man his age. Though Kip could swear that the paunch Andros had carried was shrinking, he stood at the antipodes from his beautiful son Gavin. Nor did he seem more than peeved at being interrupted pre-coitus. Perhaps Kip was a poor judge. His own glass of self-horror was constantly full, so the slightest additional drip made the whole thing spill over. But even a normal person would be embarrassed at such a thing, wouldn't they? Kip had assumed that his grandfather was ashamed and had simply controlled it, that his sudden rage had been a cover over the embarrassment. What if, instead, there was a simple void where shame would be for others, and the rage had been merely for Kip interrupting whatever plan Andros had in place to snare Tysis? A dozen times, Kip had wondered how his grandmother, by all accounts a good woman, had loved this man. And now another thought occurred to him. What if, instead of loving Andros, she'd loved the world? What if she'd seen herself as the only one who could keep this wolf from the flocks? Felia Gyle had been smart, everyone agreed on that. She'd been an orange. She'd been the only person who could get Andros Gyle to change his mind. She'd been the bulwark against the storm. And now she was gone. Kip was staring at an old man with saggy skin, sitting in a faded robe, the bare skin of his legs almost translucent, almost obscene in itself, and he was the one who suddenly felt naked. "What do you want?" he asked. "You're old. What does winning even look like for you?"
"Old?" Andros chuckled. "I've got a good 20 years left. Kip, if you and Simon don't pan out for me, I can start a new family and still have time to groom the next generation. I have the options of a young man again, but with all the advantages I didn't have when I was young. Do you not know your family's history?"
Kip wasn't looking for a lesson. "I looked back as far as my grandfather and gave up in disgust," he said. It was the best insult he could slip around the thick knot of fear blocking his throat.
"A weaker man would say I owe you, Kip, for what you did on that ship about my surfeit of red. But I'm not that man. I respect that you have the strength to not be grovelling at my feet. However, defiance is initially interesting, but it grows tiresome quickly."
"I'd love to hear about the family," Kip said snidely. The mere fact that he could say "the family" and not "your family" was a huge victory.
"You've killed my desire to reminisce. Let it be enough to say that I earned everything we have. By my generation, we were wool merchants. Wool merchants with debts and a worthless title that my drunken wastrel older brother nearly sold to pay them. Everything we are, even you, little bastard who's weaseled his way into legitimacy, is because of what I've made us."
"You wrested control of the family from your brother?" Kip asked, incredulous.
"Wrested? I've had more trouble with a bowel movement. I handed Abel a stack of papers for his signature when he was hungover. He barely glanced at them. I paid his own steward a few dinars to countersign as a witness, saying it was contracts for warehouses. He didn't read them either. I seized all the accounts, and my brother didn't even have the money to pay a solicitor to bring it to a magistrate, nor the friends willing to lend him such sums."
Kip reached out for the brandy, unthinking, and this time Andros let him take it. "Oh, thanks," Kip said automatically. Andros grinned as if this too were a victory. "You're telling me that 3 generations of Gyle brothers have been at each other's throats?" Kip asked.
3? No. 6 that I know of. There was a tale that a witch cursed us when Memnon Gyle wed her and then, as we Gyles do, cheated on her. Or more precisely, she found out that he was already wed back home. He left her broken-hearted and wandered the world having adventures, and when finally he arrived home years later, he was murdered by his brother, who had taken to comforting his wife in his brother's absence. Since then, that was 600 years ago, though I personally doubt that our blood has even a drop of that Guile's blood in it. Many other families have taken the names of the heroes of old. I'm not sure why we would be different. Not that such a thing bears repeating in public, yes? Regardless, the tale held enough force that it was said in our family that if your wife was older, and you already had one son, not to have any more children, lest you end up with two boys. Not that a son and a daughter guaranteed any better. Selina Guile, the first, had more mercy than most of the men in our family. Or less, depending on what you value. She exiled her brother Aidan Guile after castrating him so that he would have no heirs. She managed to get one of the kings of her era to make the family name and title matrilineal, which it stayed for 150 years, until an enterprising Guile's son managed to wrest control back.
Kip took a drink. He barely noticed the burning. And you think that's an acceptable way for families to act?
Acceptable? One doesn't reason with lions. One doesn't accept reality. One adapts to it.
But you aren't like my father. You didn't adapt to a situation where your brother was betraying you. You were the betrayer. The words had sounded so logical, so reasonable in Kip's head before he said them. But as they came out the blunderbuss that was his mouth, they expanded it into a razor cloud. Andros Guile's expression froze. His knuckles whitened on his brandy glass, showing the hit. It was with visible effort that he contained his rage. He hadn't become the red of all his colours by accident.
How is it to be you, Kip? Cocooned in layers of protective ignorance thicker than your blubber. A blundering whale with sperm for your brains and unintentional ruins all around. Abel thanked me for saving this family. He thanked me for saving him from a burden he was ill-fit to bear, and a string of failures that drove him to self-destruction.
So he forgave you. That tells me something about him. What does it tell me about you? Except, perhaps,
insolent boy,
that you would destroy a good man who swam seas you wished to call your own, that you are a sea demon, mindless in your territorial rage, destroying your enemies, true, but also driving away even, stop, Kip, stop, before,
your own family,
even, finally, your own wife. Oh, shit. Andros's eyes glittered, and Kip's training took over. His eyes darted back and forth from the whites of Andros's eyes to his hips, the first places he would be able to detect danger, whether magical or mundane. Then out to his hands, one of which held the crystal brandy glass, which could be flicked toward Kip as a distraction, the other of which could be used to signal Grinwoody.
"Took you long enough,"
Andros said.
"Finally reached the bottom of your rhetorical toolbox, have we?"
"Huh?" Kip asked. His sense of impending doom hadn't relaxed one whit, but Andros didn't look dangerous. Everything Kip's gut was telling him was contradicted by what Andros's eyes were saying.
"Bringing up my departed wife. Such an obvious target that I wondered if you were either stupider than I'd imagined, or more self-controlled, and therefore more dangerous than I'd believed. Turns out I was right about you after all."
"Did you even—" Andros raised a finger, and Kip shut up. He hated himself for it a moment later, but his brain must have realized that raised finger was a lifeline, and, for once, had taken control from his tongue.
"Something you should realize,"
Andros said.
"Merely because a target's obvious, and an initial line of defenses stands in place, that doesn't mean the target isn't still there, and still soft as an egg in its shell. You understand this, Lard Guile. Your disgusting obesity can withstand one insult, at least to the public eye, but even the slightest brush causes your secret self-contempt and shame to grow. So you found my obvious weak spot. Congratulations for having eyes. Just know this. Grinwoody, if he says one more word about Felia, Blow his brains out.
Kip heard the click-clack of a hammer at his left ear.
With pleasure, my lord, Grinwoodie said.
Slowly, so as not to be thought to be attacking, Kip glanced at the pistol and the man. Grinwoodie was indeed pleased, and the pistol barrel looked huge. Too close to Kip's eyeball for him to see how good the quality of it was, how likely to misfire, but then this was Andros Guile's pistol, it would be the best. Kip was getting faster at drafting, at moving, but he wasn't this fast. Not yet.
You wouldn't, Kip said.
Stupid thing to say. Grinwoodie was even standing off to the side so that the gore, and possibly the bullet, wouldn't fly from Kip onto Andros.
If you think I'm bluffing,
Andros said, leaning forward to pour himself more brandy,
say her name.
The moment stretched between them like a lazy cat. Kip knew already that he was going to fold. Andros knew it, too.
Well, that was a great talk, Grandfather.
A little needle to drive home the past loss on that count.
Are we done here?
Shouldn't have asked permission. Kip stood. Should have stood first.
The thing that astounds me, grandson,
Andros said, embracing the loss, showing it didn't hurt him as much as Kip hoped. Probably deceitfully, but still.
Damn.
Is that it must be equally obvious to both of us that I am your only hope. Our family's enemies will try to destroy you, and our family's friends won't try to save you, because they know I despise you. To say nothing of what I may do to you myself, yet you choose this path. Still. Your father's gone, surely dead by now. The facts have changed, but you haven't. Held too long. Stubbornness is indistinguishable from stupidity.
And would you respect me if I come in here and licked your boots?
Kip asked. Andros Guile looked at him like he was speaking a foreign language.
Respect. Kip, I've destroyed many men I respected. If you wish to add yourself to that list, you're close to earning the destruction, if not the respect.
Please, Kip said, underestimate me. It will only make this sweeter.
Andros grinned wryly, genuinely amused, and it was disconcerting to see that grin. It was all Gavin Guile, and the sense of bereavement Kip felt at seeing that winsome grin on this monster's face threw him off balance.
If your strategy rests on being underestimated, might not be best to announce such, you think?
Andros asked. Kip could only find inchoate curses on his once nimble tongue. He said nothing.
Enough,
Andros said. He stood and shepherded Kip to the door. He lowered his voice.
Now, the matter I summoned you for.
Or Hollum's knobby knee to my testicles. All this, and we still haven't talked about what he summoned me for.
The cards,
Andros said quietly as they reached the door.
I don't know where you've hidden them, but I want them. If you give them to me, you will be my heir. I will take you under my wing and teach you all I know, and I will tell you secrets you cannot conceive.
The cards? Again? If I found them, once I gave them to you, you'd just kill me, Kip said.
Voice down,
Andros said. He stroked his chin, thinking.
Surely Janus Borig told you how they work. I can draft four colors, but one of the colors I lack is blue. I can feel, taste, and sense what happens inside the cards, but I can't see anything. In order to use the cards to their fullest, I need a full-spectrum polychrome. The other polychromes are unacceptable for various reasons. I need you, and I would have a continuing need for you. And you would need me to teach you how to translate knowledge into power after I'm gone. If anything, you would be the partner in the superior position.
Kip blinked. It made too much sense.
If I did this, he said, I'd keep the cards in my possession. Otherwise, if you tired of me, you could simply find someone who drafts the colours you lack and put together the pictures for yourself, albeit more slowly than I could do it for you.
Done,
Andros said.
With one caveat. My card, my son's card, and my wife's are mine. If you even look at them before you hand them over, this deal is moot. Think on it. I'll give you until your half-brother arrives, or until Sunday, whichever comes first. Understand, though, if you try to hand over the cards to someone else, I'll have no choice but to kill you. Your time is running out. Grinwoodie?
The slave made a small, unobtrusive sound to signal his presence. Kip looked from one to the other. Why were they all still whispering? Why were they standing right at the door to the Promarchos' room?
How much did she overhear?
Grinwoodie shot a glance at Kip, as if wondering that Andros wished Kip to hear this, then said,
Most everything you said at the couch. She awakened almost immediately and moved to eavesdrop soon after. She won't have been able to hear any of this.
Well then, Kip, your move,
Andros said.
Unless I miss my guess, she'll try to exploit the schism in our family. And being the green that she is, she'll be impulsive enough to think she needs to act immediately. So she won't wait for instructions from her much more formidable sister, Irene. I would imagine Tisis will come to speak to you in tears at some point this week, playing the damsel in distress. That tends to work well on men who wish they were strong. Don't thank me, she's too young for my tastes, and as you surmised, not good at feigning pleasure. It's a skill most women pick up early, so I'm not sure if she's stupid or stubborn. Quite the hot blood, though, according to her best friend. Eager for the bed, though she's kept her suitors short of the Jade Gate itself.
Jade Gate?
Her quim. It's her family's horse trader roots showing through. They've been nobles a bare century. Knowing how some value such things, she's intended to sell her virginity dearly, even if it's virginity only by the most technical of definitions. Her friend, being her friend, swore up and down that her chastity, such as it is, wasn't merely for bargaining purposes, though. She claimed Tisis has always had romantical notions about her first time being special. Humph! Youth. I imagine she'll be too smart to lead her efforts on you with seduction. But as long as you play your cards right, she'll flop on her back in no time. She did for me. Not sure how you'll fit into the special first time, but she'll remember it forever. And surely that is one definition of special, is it not?
Do you poison every well you drink from? Kip asked. The sheer meanness of the man baffled him.
I just told you. I didn't drink from that well. I left it for you, on purpose, in case you were delicate about sharing with a better man. You throw my kindness in my face. Perhaps you are thick in more than the obvious sense. We've spoken too long. Begone!
Kip kept his curses and his questions to himself, and obeyed his grandfather's order, just like any other soldier in the Promarchos' army. The blackguards outside the door said nothing, but then that was what they were supposed to do, wasn't it? Four puzzled slaves were waiting for him at his room.
My lord, one said, there was a crime reported?
Kip stepped past them into the room. Everything was pristine. The desk had been replaced. The feather bed had been replaced. Every surface was gleaming with polish. Even his purse was back in its hiding spot. Kip dismissed the slaves with an apology. They looked at him like he was crazy. And who's to say they're wrong? What am I doing? I'm being used in fights I know nothing about, and I'm taking sides based purely on the personal charisma of the players, not on what's wrong or right or where I should be, or even what's most advantageous. I've been acting like a child. Andros knew exactly what I was going to do when he trashed my room. I'm that predictable. He felt suddenly sick to his stomach. In Nine Kings, I'd be the blunderbuss. Good only for short ranges and easily picked up by any enemy and pointed wherever he wished. What am I going to do?